Platero was a pleasantly run-down village of a few dozen thatched huts, perched on knobby legs of lumber, and set among rice fields near the alluvial plain of the Pampanga, Luzon's most important river. The barrio was scarcely different from any of the others the rangers had passed through, except for one detail. The POW camp lay less than 2 miles away, a half-hour's hike at best. But for the haze and the thick brush growing along the river, the villagers in Platero could have made out the guard towers of the stockade directly to the south. Because of its proximity to the target, Musi had decided to make Platero the ranger staging area and bivouac site. Here he would establish his headquarters, and the communications people would set up the field radio equipment. Here Dr. James Fisher, the battalion surgeon, would fashion a triage hospital to perform emergency surgeries in the probable event of injuries. And should the Rangers succeed in springing the POWs, Platero would serve as their first rest stop on the way to freedom. Though it was a speck of a place, with little room or food to spare, the village was instantly going to double its population. The U.S. Rangers were moving in. Reaching the edge of Platero in the failing light of the late afternoon, Musi and Prince were pleased to learn that the village dogs had been silenced, just as Pahota had promised. They were tied up in shuttered nipa shacks and animal hutches made of bamboo, their snouts twined shut with straw rope. The barking problem was solved, but as soon as the vanguard entered the town, the train of rangers abruptly came to a halt. Something was amiss. Loud voices, exchanges, a big commotion. The column inched forward a few feet, then halted again. Captain Prince nervously craned his neck to learn what the delay was. He heard something strange, a chorus singing softly in the twilight. The tune was hard to make out at first, but then Prince caught it. God Bless America. The familiar stanzas rendered in thickly accented English, the melody charmingly curdled with the occasional stale note. At the entrance to the town, a few dozen teenage girls, dressed in white gowns, were singing in sad, sweet voices. Some of the girls slipped garlands of fresh sampaguita flowers over the rangers' heads and offered welcoming kisses. Behind this cordon of singers, the village bustled with the sounds of cooking and preparation. The town was planning a feast. People were slaughtering their chickens and cows, building fires, stirring vats of stew. The villagers had prepared a classic Filipino fiesta, with all its gaiety and spare-no-cost lavishness. Everyone was brimming with a warmth that would almost seem cloying if it wasn't so obviously sincere. Many of the rangers welled with tears. That the people of Platero were throwing this kind of reception in the midst of war's misfortunes made their generosity all the more stirring. Colonel Musi was as touched as everyone else by this welcoming ceremony, but he was also understandably paranoid about the noise. He kept darting nervous glances south in the direction of the camp. It was hard to join in the spirit of the party when phalanxes of the Emperor's army were now on the move a few miles away. Musi told Hosan and Pahota to have their men form a tight circle around the village to guard against Japanese ambush. He smiled awkwardly as one of the ladies hung a lei around his neck. "I told them they might sing if they would do it very softly," Musi said. Then we all joined in, and there in the semi-darkness, very low, we sang God Bless the Philippines. The Filipinos' feast was magnificent. Rice and camote sweet potatoes, fresh papaya, whole chickens wrapped in banana leaves and baked in the coals. They poured glasses of lambanog, a strong coconut wine. The hungry rangers sat around fires scattered about the barrio and fell into spirited conversations with the locals. Occasionally, little kids would timidly reach out and touch the rangers to see what an American felt like. After dinner, the mayor of Cabanatuan City showed up and produced a bottle of Johnny Walker Black. "It was good pre-war scotch," Musi recalled. "We passed it around so that a lot of the boys could get a little sip, just a taste." The colonel then struck up a conversation with the mayor and, despite his hospitality, gradually began to have his doubts about the man. "I was pretty suspicious of him," Musi later wrote, "because he'd been mayor all through the Jap occupation." He wondered if there was even the remotest possibility that this man was a collaborator, a Makapili. The colonel didn't take any chances. He thanked the mayor for the whiskey and then, with apologies, explained that the rangers were placing him under house arrest with an armed guard to watch him at all times. It was just a precaution, Musi assured him, and the good mayor would be allowed to return to Cabanatuan once the mission was over. As the night wore on, the rangers dispersed into smaller groups, each one following a different Filipino host to his home for the night. A few of the luckier rangers were invited inside the shacks to sleep on real beds, but most were quartered in barns and tool sheds and louse-infested stables strewn all about the barrio. Musi instructed his men to sleep with their boots on in case something happened and they all had to react quickly during the night. Pitched among rice sacks, their rifles set in the straw beside them, the haggard rangers dozed off to the night bugs and, for some, the sour breath of a carabao tethered in the next stall.